ironically true, of course, is alienate other people. I would absolutely say I've struggled with every single one of those, and there's a myriad more ways in which my lack of acceptance of myself, my lack of love of myself, translates into negative scenarios for other people. An inability to get that thing that I long for so much, which is love, which is affection, which is a sense of acceptance. So, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, that we can't really control at all how other people behave, but we can take a look at ourselves. Like, none of us really, when it comes to loneliness and connection and love, none of us can demand that of somebody else, right? We can't demand intimacy from somebody else. You could even say it's perhaps not our right, but we can foster it. We can develop it. We can create an atmosphere around ourselves in which it is more likely. We can create a safe, loving environment in which people are invited into a deeper experience of intimacy, a deeper connection. And that's good for us and it's good for other people. So we're just going to explore this a little bit. But before we go any further, I wanted to see, what do you think about this? And we're going to, at our tables, we're all sat in tables. We've got a couple of discussion questions which are going to go up on the screen here. And that's, maybe we can pop those up. In what ways is self-acceptance important in developing healthy relationships? Now, you could actually disagree with that. I'm assuming you agree with me. You may not do, and that might be a good point of discussion. And then as you discuss that, we're just going to take a few minutes, not a lot of time here, but can you share some of your personal experience with this? That might be going a little bit further, okay? No pressure for anybody to share anything, to be honest. But we're in this set up with some tables. If you want to share a little bit more about your story and how that's played out, that would be wonderful too. So let's just take a moment. If you'd rather not, you know, you may be sat not at a table and rather not enter into a discussion, that's totally cool. If you would like to join a table, just find a gap at a table and jump in. Let's just share around these couple of questions and we'll come back together again in a few minutes. Okay, we'll just one more minute, okay? So if you sort of want to wrap the conversations up and then we'll come back together again. One more minute. So let's come back together again. Hopefully you had some good conversations at your tables. We're not going to go around the room or anything. What got said at the table stays at the table, okay? So you're in safe hands here. Do also please feel free to eat the M&Ms. They're not for show. They are edible, so help yourself to those. We're just going to carry on and explore this idea of self-acceptance, self-love a little bit further. Again, it's something I think we talk about quite a bit here. This sense that since we're talking about loneliness, this concept that we're not alone in the universe. You know, we talk a lot about God is love and God is with us. That actually the truth is we are not alone. And scripture is full of examples and stories of God being with us. We're going to look at a few here, and we're going to go through these fairly quickly. They're all pretty well known, I think. I'm sure we've read these before in the services here many times before. Here's something in Romans, something that Paul wrote. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation, he's got all his bases covered, can separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. So nothing separates us from the love of God. Let's go back to the Psalms, back into the Hebrew Scriptures. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, that's the underworld, what that term there means, Sheol, the underworld, you are there. So it's like, if I go up to heaven, if I go up down to the underworld, God is there. God is with us at all times. Also in the Psalms, this is a very famous Psalm, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his namesake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Jesus said Matthew, at the end of Matthew's gospel, surely I am with you always, even to the end of the age. And then, of course, Jesus said something that we've been looking at a lot recently in John chapter 17. Jesus talked about this more sort of mystical sense in which we are in God and God is in us. We're in union with God. God isn't just present. We're in union with God. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I and them, and you and me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. So there's this Scripture's full of this sense of God is present everywhere. God is with us. God is love. We're intimately connected to God. And yet the reality is, for most of us, I think, we feel lonely. We don't always feel the presence of God in that kind of way. And we might try and convince ourselves that that is true, like good Christians, you know, well, that's what the Bible says, so God is with me. But our experience is somewhat different. And again, we've been exploring this concept a little bit, you know, in the last series, when we looked at partial perspectives of God. We looked at one week at the God of intimacy. It was actually the week we got snowed out. And we talked about the fact, or we're looking at that in that subject matter, at the fact that maybe we don't experience God's presence all the time because God is beyond, bigger than, and more than our best feelings, our best thoughts. In other words, our human capacity is necessarily limited. And we talked about the fact that, you know, that's not a big surprise. If you think about the electromagnetic spectrum, we just perceive one part of it. We think about the universe is perhaps, you know, only 5% of it is matter that we can actually detect and discern. There are probably, if we think about science, multiple dimensions that we're pretty much most of the time unaware of. So there is a much greater reality out there than we are able to perceive. And we've talked about the need to sort of open our minds and to transcend our senses in order to really comprehend and experience and kind of know in a beyond our mental capacity way of knowing that God is love and God is present with us. So we talked in that week about the contemplative tradition and transcending our senses. And I just want to talk a little bit about this issue a little bit for a moment. Our senses, there's nothing wrong with our senses, right? We also talked one week about sacraments and how the physical material world can really help us connect with God. And God is clearly present in the material world. And we connect with God in very material, normal, quite human kinds of ways. And that's a beautiful thing. But our senses can also be not only not enough, but also at times they can almost deceive us. Let's look at a couple of images that illustrate this point. Those lines there are parallel, right? Even when you've had caffeine, they're parallel, right? They just don't look it, right? Somehow we're hoodwinked because our immediate reaction is that they are not that way. Here's another example. We've shown this one before. How many triangles do you see there? How many triangles are there? Answer, of course, is there are no triangles. We think there are triangles there. In the last one, we saw something we saw a reality and we perceived it differently. In this instance, we're actually seeing something that isn't there, right? There are no actual triangles. There are just suggestions of triangles. And we experience this in everyday life all the time, right? We go into a conversation with somebody and we think, oh, that person was really hostile. That person was really mean, really critical. But really, it's just that was our perception. It wasn't necessarily the reality. It happens at an emotional level. It happens at a visual level. It happens in all kinds of ways. And part of what we're trying to wrestle with here is this challenge of growing in our ability to experience and sense God beyond our senses. Because it's beyond our senses, because it's beyond language, because it's beyond thoughts, we struggle to even put language to it. But perhaps if we could engage that way, we might have a deeper experience. Now, I'm not the only person that thinks this. We're going to watch a brief video clip here where David Attenborough, the famous naturalist, is being interviewed. And he's generally regarded by most people as an atheist. But he's actually turns out he's not an atheist. He's more of an agnostic. And in this interview, we're going to see, I think, a very interesting perception he has about thinking or perceiving the divine. Let's look at the video.
I don't want to go the full hog because, I mean, somebody like your old friend Richard Dawkins, you used to go tadpoling with him years ago, I think. Richard Dawkins would say, look, you described yourself as an agnostic, but he'd want to say, why don't you say that you're an atheist? Because if you say that, you clear away all this religious clutter and people can then appreciate the scientific wonder of the world. But Your agnosticism, I think, would you say it's a scientific agnosticism? You feel, as a scientist, you should never say you know?
Yeah, I can't help thinking of when I have, for example, taken off the top of a termite hill and I've seen termites in there, all busying about building walls, looking after the queen, caring for the pupae, clearing the nest, all busy about it. Then they're all blind. And they haven't the faintest idea that I am there watching what they're doing, because they don't have those sense organs which would allow them to know that. And I do sometimes feel that maybe I'm lacking in some sense organ, and I don't know whether there's anybody else involved in all this sort of thing. And it's a very confident thing to say that I'm absolutely sure that there's nothing in this world that I don't have the sense organs to appreciate. That would be my position. And Richard, I don't doubt, would say, well, that's rather feeble. That's not being very brave. And he's got a case.
Good old David Attenborough. You've got to hand it to him. So there's David Attenborough, you know, acknowledging the fact that we don't understand reality. We don't, you know, so he's talking about it from one perspective where, you know, it would be, he's saying you can't be certain that there's no God. But perhaps in another way, the way this might apply to us is, you know, probably most of us here believe in the divine in some way. But perhaps we could say that we don't understand how much love there is. We just don't fully comprehend, fully appreciate, fully experience just how much we are loved, just how powerful love is, just how powerful the whole way of the universe is. And perhaps, and I certainly feel this way myself more and more in my own individual life and also just pastorally, that perhaps if we were to boil down the purpose of our spirituality, the purpose of this journey we're on as followers of Jesus, as pilgrims on this planet for the time that we have, the purpose of that journey, or the meaning that we find in that journey, is really a search for awareness of love, a search to become more intimately aware of love, and then to absorb that love and embody that love and live that love out. It's this whole journey of love. So how can we experience more of that and engage with that more and transform our minds and open our minds? And I want to share a story that kind of perhaps illustrates this a little bit and might cue us in to just how much love there is and how much God loves us and how much longing there is on behalf of the part of God, the divine, this God is love dimension. It's a story that I've told here before. It's a story about my dog, right? So you have to bear with me. You may have heard this story before, but I think it bears repeating. If not, because I've always found whenever I repeat myself, I always feel very sensitive about repeating myself. But it turns out that was nobody was listening the first time around anybody. Anyway, that's what I found out, because people say, oh, that was a great story. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the first time you heard it. Anyway, when I was very young, so I was about 7 years old, I loved nature, I loved animals. I mean, you will know that. And my sister came home from school. She was about 5 years older than me. And her school teacher's fifth cousin, twice replaced or something like that, some distant relative, had a dog that had puppies, and they were border collie crosses. And she shared this at the dinner table, and I was like, oh, please, can we get a puppy? Because they were giving the puppies away. And, you know, my mother, who's just one of the sweetest, kindest people on the planet, was, no, we can't do that. And, we were not a very well-off family. Both my parents were working. Life was somewhat stressful. 4 kids, very young kids. It was crazy to get a puppy. It really was crazy to get a puppy. My dad, who is another unbelievably loving, kind, wonderful person, said, well, let's just go look at them. My mother was like, well, but we are absolutely not going to get a puppy. Of course, we came home with a puppy after going and look at them. Because I made this connection with one of the puppies there, who was just this beautiful, sweet thing, and it peed on me and licked my face, and I just thought it was, you know, I didn't reciprocate completely. But we just bonded, and I took this puppy home. We called it Toby. And Toby and I just lived life together. We were the best of friends. This actually happened. We went out one day. We both got in, wet through, and I was lying in front of the fire. I had a coal fire at the time, stroking him. And I said, "Toby, do you love me?" And he nodded his head. No kidding. And there was just... So I loved this dog so much that I wanted to communicate with this dog. I wanted the dog to know that I loved him. And I am probably imagining the nod of the head. But there's this distance, right? Because I'm human and he's a dog. And there's lots of questions about the consciousness of dogs, but he's probably not conscious. So I'm just his owner. But to me, it was so much more, right? It was so much more. Anyway, we didn't know how to train a dog. It was chaos in the house. And he got run over once, not seriously, but you know, got injured because he would get out. And we just didn't know what the heck we were doing with dogs. And it just got too much. And my mum and dad, again, wonderful, loving people, but they made the decision, the dog needs to go. All kinds of reasons behind that, which I won't go into. Somehow, I didn't get the memo. Now, this is in sort of our family folklore now. But somehow, I think probably what happened is they didn't know what to say to me. And I would, you know, I would have refused to let the dog go or run away from home or something like that. But one evening, we got sent to my grandma's for dinner. She lived just around the corner from us. And the plan was that the dog would be gone when I got back and that they would explain then. Don't judge my parents. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, we're all doing our best as parents, right? And, you know, after years of counseling, I've got over it now. But so, you know, and finally forgiven. But trouble was, the people coming to pick up the dog, and the dog was going to a farm. Toby went off to a farm, and it was way better for him. You know, if I really loved Toby, I'd have wanted what's best for him, right? So, you know, it was way better for him. But I came back early. Either they were late, or we came back from my grandma's early, and I saw him being bundled into the car. And I was just distraught. It was one of those Disney scenes where I'm running down the road, and Toby's looking out the back window at me, and I never saw Toby again. We did actually go out to visit him at the farm, but he didn't show up. He was off out doing something else. And, you know, the reality is probably Toby was not thinking about me, right? Whereas I never stopped thinking about him. So I, from then on, I had this obsession about border collie dogs. So I watched things on the TV like sheep herding trials on the TV. My favorite show on the TV was called One Man and His Dog. This is as a young kid. I think we've got a picture. Yeah. And Phil Drabble, who ran that show. It was a sheepdog trial show, you know, with shepherds and sheepdogs were sort of trial against each other. Phil Drabble, I think he was one of my childhood heroes. I mean, look at that guy. I mean, they do not make TV presenters like that anymore, right? What a stud. But he's dead now, of course. But I just love, I would love to have been Phil Drabble. And a lot of people think we resemble each other, actually. I don't, you know. I just loved, I had this longing, deep longing for a border collie, and I would put it on my Christmas list, and I know some of you have heard this story. I put it on my Christmas list every year, sort of almost as a joke, because I then had a family, and we had four kids, and there was no room for a dog. And, my wife made loving, good decisions about whether we should have a dog or not while the kids were very younger. But then our kids started getting older, and they also started to leave home, which was tragic, but it meant that, hey, our life was a little bit different. And then one Christmas, I got this little guy as a complete surprise. So this is Baron. He's a border collie dog. And you can imagine when I got him that Christmas morning, it was about 4 years ago now, it was a total surprise. And I can remember holding him and smelling him. And you know how powerful smells are. And I felt like, this is the reincarnation of Toby. He's come back, right? So now he's more than that. But that was such a powerful thing. Now here's the, and we do everything together. I mean, I love this dog. I love this dog. Now the thing is, he has no idea how he's loved. He doesn't really get it because he's a dog, right? He just is. He probably thinks that every owner loves their dog like this. What he doesn't know is that I've been waiting for him all my life. I've been, he, he is, I've been waiting for him. He doesn't know that. He just showed up. And I think you'll see where we're going here, that if you think about perhaps the story of the universe, and if we go back to what David Attenborough was saying about this sense organ, maybe we lack the sense organs to really know what's out there. Perhaps the story of the universe is this evolution of a sensibility, a greater sensibility to the real nature of reality, the real nature of love, that God is present and God is love, and love is the way of the universe. Now, that doesn't mean everything works out right, because we don't always act in loving ways. We don't always resonate with love. Sometimes we go against love. But the point being, we may just not be aware, just like Baron is not fully aware necessarily of just how much he's loved. He's not aware of that story. And perhaps we're not aware of that story. Perhaps God is waiting for us to wake up and has been waiting for 13.8 billion years for a point where nature can self-consciously reflect and say, I love you too. And can you imagine that? Like if Baron said to me, if his consciousness was raised such that he was able to respond lovingly back. Now, there's always a chance he might say, actually, you're not that big a deal, if I'm honest about it. I mean, that would be tragic, right? And that's the risk, right, of consciousness. But what if the story of the universe is like God calling creation to a place where we can actually comprehend and experience and live in this love? What if the whole evolution of humanity is all about this sensibility to love? What if your story, your individual story, my individual story, is really a story of growing in the ability to comprehend, to experience beyond anything we've experienced before, this dimension of love? What if we could do that? What if that was possible? Now, how do we go about that then? I mean, that's the big question, right? How do we go about that? How do we raise our level of consciousness? How do we rewire our brains? How do we rewire our feelings? How do we go about it? And this is where the challenge is. And this is where I think, as I said, I think we could almost boil our whole spiritual journey down to this very thing. Now, we talked earlier about how we live in the sensual world, right? We sense things. We see them, we smell them, we taste them, we feel them. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But we need more than that. It's just not enough. We need more than that. So how do we go about it? Well, I want to give us three kind of pointers about how we might increase our awareness and experience of the fact that we are not alone, that we are deeply loved, and that we can confidently live in this world as people who are loved and accepted beyond measure. First one is this, just simply awareness. Just being aware of the fact that actually we tend not to want to go beyond our senses because we can trust our senses, or we think we can trust our senses, right? So if we think about even this whole idea of loneliness, for instance, lack of relationship, an experience, a very real, tangible experience of lack of relationship, it's very easy for us to go to other places to try and fill that void. We might, as the song goes, look for love in all the wrong places, right? And there's always sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and all, you know, the usual things that we prop our lives up with. But there's also other distractions. Maybe it's work. Maybe it's perfectionism. Maybe it's, you know, some of the things we talked about at the beginning. But at least could we be aware that we might actually be escaping from the very thing that we long for, the very thing that we want? So if we could think through our lives and think, okay, to what degree am I trying to sensually fill my life with stuff to either distract me or to sort of keep a certain level of buoyancy in my life to keep me going? But that would be, so awareness is one thing, right? Just being a little more reflective about our lives. Secondly, I think we, even though we we would want to transcend our senses, recognizing that we can practice spiritual practices through our senses that help us connect with God's love, right? We talked about those, as I mentioned, a few weeks ago. It might be through nature, or through art, or through music, or through relationships, through company. It might be all kinds of ways that seem to work for us. Well, let's practice those. Let's perhaps instead of filling our lives with stuff that just distracts us, let's fill our lives with things that really help us connect with love. But then let's also practice transcending our senses. And this is so tricky. This is why we put such an emphasis on contemplative prayer here. Because really all contemplative prayer is an attempt to access what is otherwise really beyond us. And it's kind of difficult because it's beyond us. And it's somewhat out there. But if we're gonna raise our consciousness, if we're gonna become more enlightened about the reality of the universe, that God is love, and that we are not alone ever, then, and that reality that Jesus talks about, like that God is in us and we are in God, I mean, it's that level of intimacy, then we're going to have to work at that in some unusual ways. And so we pretty often here, we emphasize contemplative practices. In that the workbook from the last series, which is still online, you can look at the annex there, and it has a whole bunch of prayer practices that might help us with that. And we're going to do one in a second. And then there's this issue, this third issue. So there's, you know, awareness, there's practice, right? Practice using our senses, and sort of transcendental practice, if you like. That sounds like a really bad term, doesn't it? But you get what I mean. More contemplative type practice. But then thirdly, there's this issue of pain and suffering. And I don't really know how to put this into words, but I think you'll be able to relate to what I'm saying here, that the leading edge into this reality beyond our ability to perceive or our ability to sense, this leading edge, this, the horizon, if you like, of our sensual being, our human experience, that edge is often very, very painful, right? It's things like failure, loss, rejection, grief, open that edge up in a raw kind of way, but that helps us to understand something deeper about reality, something deeper about the universe. And our tendency, I think, is to respond to those by either just trying to smooth over that surface. Rawness is too painful. And so we kind of withdraw from that pain, and we might just try and cover it up or deny it, or we distract ourselves from it. You know, we go back to sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or all the other distractions that we have. But could we perhaps see that pain and suffering, problematic as it is, and terrible as it may be, could we see that as even a possible place in which we could be called to grow, called into a deeper understanding of the nature of reality? This is why it's through the harder experiences of our lives that we grow the most, that that our hearts and minds are opened up to something different. And it's why this message today is called Facing Loneliness, because loneliness, this sense of being alone, is painful. And probably our natural reaction is, let's just find people. Let's fill that void, or let's meet that pain with relationships. But if we don't actually recognize that sense of loss, that sense of loneliness, is really telling us and showing us that we need to connect with love. We need to accept ourselves and love ourselves and be in this love of God, this God who is love, then we're potentially missing the point. We're jumping to a remedy. We're trying to treat the symptoms without really getting to the cause. So we don't want to run away from it. We want to face it. And there's some discussion questions today. Each week we'll have discussion questions that you can download online, and we have some hard copies outside. They're just one pages. You know, it's not a booklet or anything like that. That will help. Those discussion questions this week will help us maybe explore that a little bit. And I'm in no way trying to say pain is a good thing or suffering is a good thing. But it's our reality, right? It's part of our reality. And here's another paradox of the universe. It's through pain, often through loss, often through rejection, that we really experience or have the potential to experience the depth of love that is the true nature of reality. So we're going to just take a moment here. We're going to do communion. And actually, we'll have slightly different this morning because the communion is going to be given by servers. We'll have people by the doors as usual, and then there'll be a couple of people at the front here as well. And we're just going to take a moment to reflect on what I've been talking about. And we're going to do, before we go into communion, we'll just do a little prayer together. When we finish the prayer, you'll have an opportunity to take communion. We've got candles at the back there, as usual. There's places you can write out prayers, and we'll have folk at the back wanting to pray with you. So we'll have the usual ways that you can respond, and when we create this time to respond at this time in the service, that's all going to be the same. But we're going to do a brief contemplative prayer together. And as a result of doing that, I would say this. You might feel, you know, I just want to stay in that prayer. I'm going to stay sat where I am. And it's okay not to do communion, right? I don't know whether you feel permission for that, but maybe this week you don't do communion, and that's okay. That's cool. But it might be the most meaningful thing for you to actually come and take the gluten-free crackers and the grape juice. Please feel free to do that. But if you want to just stay put where you are after you've prayed this prayer, please feel free to do that as well. So let's just quieten our hearts. And this is just you and God here. So just relax and take some deep breaths in and out. Just clear out your lungs. And we're just going to focus on our breathing for a moment. And we know, just even physiologically, just breathing like this relaxes us. Even if it's purely a material thing, that's a good thing. But we're also here going to try and just engage with a reality beyond ourselves. So I'm going to talk us through this a little bit. This is a kind of like a guided meditation, but I'll, in a moment I'll stop talking and we'll just have silence. But as you breathe in and out, just picture yourself immersed in, surrounded by God's love. Full, complete acceptance. And breathe it in. And with every breath in, just breathe in that acceptance. And just let the rhythm of your breathing sort of connect with what you're surrounded by. So that you're immersed in this love. This love is in you as you breathe it in, and it's all around you. You're just immersed in it and full of it. And just imagine yourself immersed and becoming one with that love. And what will happen is your mind is going to tell you otherwise. Your mind will wander, you know, it will just get distracted by something else. Your mind might go to, well, here's the top 10 reasons why I am not loved. Or you might feel uncomfortable about being in this atmosphere of love because you have secrets. Things you've thought and said and done. And we're just going to let go of those. So not only as you breathe in are you going to breathe in God's love, but just as you breathe out, let go of fear, shame, because nothing, neither angels nor demons, neither good nor evil, neither the best things you've done or the worst things you've done, firstly, none of them are hidden, and secondly, none of them disqualify you. So we're just going to ignore those thoughts. We're going to breathe them out. And you might even want to visualize those thoughts not being yours. They're not you. They don't define you. One way of doing that is to imagine them as bubbles that just pop. You can just pop them. They're just thoughts. Pop them. Or you could imagine them like a leaf on a river in front of you that's just going by. There's a thought. It's not me, though. I'm going to let it go. And it goes off downstream. That might help. But what we're going to do for a few moments here is just breathe. Breathe in God's love. Breathe out fear and shame. And then as thoughts, negative thoughts come in, thoughts that suggest to you, perhaps strongly, that you are not loved, we're just going to let them go. We're going to ignore them. Let's take a few moments here. Okay, so perhaps, and let's just stay in a prayerful place, perhaps we're beginning to, I don't know, just connect with something beyond ourselves. Let's stay in that place. Again, if you want to take communion, please do that. If you want someone to pray with you, you know, want to light a candle. If you want to just stay where you are and continue to breathe in God's love, to continue to immerse yourself in a reality beyond ourselves, then please do that too. The band are going to play some music for us as well. So as you're ready, please feel free to come forward, take the bread and wine, or whatever else you'd like to do. Thank you.
Standing in fire, will not be overcome. Through the valley of the shadow,
stand and sing along with us as we sing our closing song.